You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Welcome to episode number 2. In this episode, Charles Roberts interviews Mark Wood about buying his first investment property here in Denver. So I really enjoyed listening to it as Mark shares some great insight and tips about buying his first property. In addition to this interview, Charles also wrote a case study discussing this property and all the numbers. You can find a link to it in the show notes, which are at denverinvestmentrealestate.com/podcast2. Also, be sure to listen through all the way to the end of the podcast as I'll share an update on how Mark handled the curveball of his rent coming in $200 less than expected. Anyway, here's Charles and Mark. Enjoy.
This is Charles Roberts. I'm in the studio with Mark Wood, and I asked Mark to come in. He is a newer investor that we've been working with the last couple of months, and he purchased a property, and I just said, hey, Mark, come on in. There are a lot of people who would love to hear what you just did, what worked, what didn't work, lessons that you've learned in just the couple of months that you've been doing this. We did purchase a property, and please take it away. Introduce yourself, and I'm going to ask you a few questions, but we just want to understand from you, what was it like to begin the process of, say, wanting to buy an investment property? Why did you want to buy one? And we'll go from there.
Sure. So I'm a IT manager with First Bank here in town, and over the last, well, it's actually probably been about 8 years now, I've been looking at doing something like this. Initially, there was some apprehension, lack of money, those kind of things. And then also some of the, how do I even get started? The market's ramping up. There's all those kind of things that happened as we went along. And I think I really got sold on doing this. I bought a condo in 2012, I think it was, maybe it was 2011. And I had a roommate who was paying part of the mortgage, so that was nice. And kind of learned from there, this really can work. It's just how do we figure out how to do it. And after that, I ended up getting married. So I bought a house with my wife, which slowed things down a little because we wanted to purchase that house and everything. And then once I got to a point where I could do it, I needed to figure out how can I. And I actually found Charles' information online and touched base with him. And we got started, a good sit down, kind of what am I looking at? And we went out, started looking at a lot of different properties, specifically condos. We started down in Aurora, if I remember right, looking down there where some numbers were pretty good and just figuring out what was it that I wanted as an investor. You know, is it something that's in a little rougher neighborhood with better returns, or something that's a little nicer in a different neighborhood with lower returns? You know, you can do it a lot of ways. And you know, stepping through that really helped, I think, get started and see, yes, you can do this, and you can do it a lot of ways. I always remember one thing that you told me, Charles, was it's about me and what I want, not the right way, which is kind of what you get out of the books, is here's the way to do it. It's not the one way.
Great. So how many properties do you think we looked at, if you remember? I know we went a bunch of times. Five, six times we went out, maybe looked at 30, 40 properties. And that gave you a perspective on what the market was telling you, what you could get, and what your return would be for different types of properties in different neighborhoods.
Yep. And we ended up actually expanding kind of up into the northern neighborhoods, Thornton, North Glen, that kind of thing, too, just looking at Aurora. It seemed like as we went through there, the properties were going pretty quick.
They were.
So, you know, just trying to spread out and, you know, increase the chances, I guess, was kind of it. And it was decent stuff up there every once in a while, not quite as much that could give us the numbers. But.
So let's talk about what fun we had with the first property you went under contract with. Want to talk about that real quick? I think that was in Thornton, right?
It was. Yeah, it was kind of near 76 and I-25, pretty close up there. And we went under contract on it. It was a decent place, you know, needed a little bit of paint, that kind of a little bit of work. I remember the fireplace needed a little bit of stuff, little things like that. It wasn't anything major. And I think we walked in and there was just this slight smell, which we talked about being an advantage.
Totally an advantage, because owner occupants will be really turned off, and investors love cat pee. Love cat pee.
Yeah. Well, and the funny thing is when we went back the second time, there wasn't there anymore. So that worked out pretty well. But we put an offer in on that, a little bit above asking, wasn't a lot above, and got accepted. And as we went through the inspection, the inspector went down in the crawl space and there was a lot of standing water.
And again, this was a condo. So this was an attached unit. Yep. We go down and there's quite a bit of standing water in the crawl space. So what did we do? How did we evaluate that?
Well, the inspector first kind of said, here's what I think. And then we had a plumber that you knew come out and just take a look and say, hey, here's my opinion. Here's what needs to be done. The HOA actually had somebody come out as well and said basically the same stuff. So after we went through there, there's a lot of things that needed to be done. There was mud coming in from a couple places that weren't sealed well. The drainage on the outside was just bringing all the water in. There was a sump pit, but no sump pump to get it out. So there's a lot of things that needed to be done to get it right. And we ended up talking a little bit and asked for them to do those things.
So here's like the type of story you can't make up. The owner of that unit was the president of the HOA.
Yep.
So I said, Mark, no problem. We actually get the inside here. Obviously, this is an HOA problem. Obviously, they need to take care of it. Let's put together an inspection objection that is actually based on their own plumber. The HOA's plumber came out and told us what we needed to do. I didn't want to be overconfident, but I said, hey, everything tells me that the HOA needs to do it. What happened when we submitted the reasonable inspection objection?
Yeah, didn't want to do that. They'd have the HOA do the drainage and that on the outside, and that was it.
And I'll tell you, I was stunned. So I talked to the listing agent, who was also pretty stunned. And he was a great guy and was really, really, you know, representing his seller, but kind of said to me, yeah, Charles, I don't quite know. I get why you're not buying this property. We all kind of thought it would happen. So the realities of real estate is we thought we had a good deal, and we really thought we were going to get this work mitigated by the HOA that legally has to be responsible for doing this. But the seller said no, wouldn't sign the resolution. Even the president of the HOA, as he was, wouldn't do it. So we moved on to another property.
Yep. Actually, that weekend, there was a couple. I think you were out of town for one, and I went to an open house up in First Creek. And there were a couple properties up there that we had looked at before, and then we ended up going up to another one up there and talked with the agent a little bit, somebody that you knew.
That I closed a deal with, yep.
Yeah, and I think that was very helpful in us actually getting it, because it sounded like our offer was a little bit lower than others, definitely above market, but it got accepted.
It was, yeah. So
just a week later.
Yep, so we put in an offer, and it was someone that I'd worked with. He'd actually been an agent of mine at Your Castle Real Estate and a mentee of mine and an actual assistant of mine as well. So great relationship, but of course he represented his seller correctly. We put an offer. We got it under contract. And then you were using Joe Massey at Castle & Cook. Talk a little bit about the mortgage process that you went through.
It was really easy. So when we first started, I talked with you, and one of the first things was line up financing, which makes a lot of sense. So we talked with a few people and ended up choosing Joe. There was a lot of reasons. I mean, he's great to work with. He's very open and very quick to respond. There's a lot of things that he was able to provide, even if he's not available, where I could get information, those kind of things. So it was pretty easy for us. And we ended up actually, my dad and I ended up going in on this after we were talking. He actually has a couple of places already that he rents out and was interested in getting back into it. So we both had a talk with Joe, applied, you know, and just went from there. It was pretty easy for us.
Great. So far, so good. So we get it under contract, competitive bid, but we got it in the First Creek neighborhood of Green Valley Ranch by the airport in Denver. So how about the inspection? You go through the inspection, and what'd you find?
Cakewalk. Nothing.
Cakewalk. This one was easy.
Yeah, there were a couple really minor things. I mean, there was like a little bit of paint on the outside, some weather stripping. You could tell there was a dog or cat or something, scratched it a couple times, wasn't in bad shape at all. You know, it's little, really minor things.
And that's one of the reasons we bought this property, which I believe was at a 7.2 cap, if I remember right.
Yep.
So the cash flow was decent. But what we particularly liked about this property and this development, as I own three properties there that I bought in the last year, I've closed on 15 there in the last 15 months. We know the development inside and out. They won a construction defect lawsuit about a year ago against KB Homes. They are flush with cash. They have seven figures in their account, and they have eight figures, something like 10 or 12 million that they're putting into the properties for some of the construction defects. So we took a cap that was reasonable, but not stellar, because it was a relatively new build. It was either 2006 or 2010, because those were the two phases, and a really solid HOA. And you, as the buyer, said, you know what? I'm willing to take a 7.2 cap, decent cash flow, for what seems like a really solid property.
Yeah. And we had the numbers at, I think, a 10% cash on cash return, which was still really good.
Yeah, which is 10% better than U.S. Bank.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So we get past that. And then we get to the lending. Everything's going good with the lender until I get the appraisal. And the appraisal comes back, and I believe we were at a price of $247,000.
Yep.
And the appraisal came back at $239,000. And this is, I won't say common, but this is the type of thing that does happen occasionally in developments, especially developments where there are comps, where the prices are leaping upwards. And I'll tell you, it was a good appraisal. There was nothing wrong with it. So I went to you. First thing I did is I called you up. I popped it right over to you. I emailed it to you, the PDF, and I said, okay, Mark, here's the deal. What do you want to do before I go and talk to the listing agent? How do you feel about this? What do you want? Do you want to go to 247? Do you want to stay at 239? What do you want to do? What'd you say?
239
indeed you did. So I said, great, no problem. Let me call the listing agent. And I talked to the listing agent who, you know, well-trained guy, because I trained him. I said, okay, dude, you know, here's, you know, sucks. I know. Tell me what you guys want to do. And he said, well, you know, would he come up to 237? I said, I don't think so. I talked to him. He doesn't want to take $8,000 out of his pocket. Why don't you go to your seller and come back, you know, just tell me what you want to do. We'll figure this out. He goes to his seller. He comes back and says, can we split the difference? Now, we talked about potentially going back to the appraiser. I invited him to talk to Joe, the lender, but the listing agent understood that there was really no chance we were going to get the appraiser. I said, if you can get this appraisal to 247, my guy will pay 247. Make it happen. But he realized that wasn't going to happen. He talks to his guy and comes back and says, let's split the difference, 243. I said, great, let me talk to Mark. I call you. How does that go?
Basically, it was something that we had definitely considered if he came back with something like that and thought about it a little. You know, we wanted to take the minimum amount of cash we could to the deal. Obviously, it gives us better numbers. But another thing that I remember you saying as we walked around some of the properties is you got to think long term. And ultimately, as we looked at it with the difference between what we would have paid from a down payment perspective at 247 versus bringing an extra $4,000, it was really only about $2,500 more that we were bringing to the table than we would have. So at that point, it was pretty easy to move forward with that. But I also asked you specifically as an investor, what do you think? And you were kind of on that same page. Yeah, let's move forward with this as it is. What's a grand or two in the scheme of things
here? But what did I say to you? I remember very specifically, because you said to me exactly what a client should say. Charles, what would you do? And I said, okay, here's the deal. We're coming in at 243. It actually bumped our cap rate 0.1%. I typed it in and it went up a little bit. You said, what would you do? I said, okay, I'll tell you exactly what I would do. I believe, and what I said to you is I believe that if we went back to the seller, I think we'd get another $1,000 off. Yeah. I really do. I actually think so. We're, you know, a good relationship, good lender, all of that. But I told you the truth. I would actually just do it at 243, leave a tiny little bit on the table, and have everything go really smoothly. And I have found over 20 years of doing this, it's not about every dollar. And you can ask a question that can get you into trouble. And sometimes leaving a little money on the table builds a relationship for the next time in ways that you might not even know. So you asked me a direct question. I told you that that's what I would do. And then you ended up deciding with you and your dad that that's what you wanted to do.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, that's definitely it. And it's, I'm with you. I think, you know, ultimately, what are you losing? If you look at it from 1,000 to 2,000 in the scheme of this, we're looking 10 years out. What's that going to matter?
Okay, so let's now continue. This was a little bit ago. You're getting it rented. We sit down in the studio. I just ask you a couple of questions, and you just hit me with something that I had not seen before. Of course, we just want to have full disclosure. So what was our best guess that market rent was? About $1,850?
Okay,
and you're working with a property manager, a colleague of mine, who does this a lot and all that kind of stuff. And I said, how did it go? What's happening? And you were going to get Section 8. Tell me where you are right now.
Yeah, we put in the paperwork that we found a qualified tenant, put in the paperwork, and got an email back saying that the appropriate rent that the housing authority thought for the property was $1,656, I think.
So to be open here, we're talking about Denver Housing Authority that distributes Section 8 vouchers. Lots of pros and cons with Section 8. Call me if you want to know more about it. I love Section 8 personally, and Mont likes it a lot too. So you found a great tenant. You submitted to the Denver Housing Authority. And here's the crazy thing. I closed a deal, the same exact property, literally in the same complex a month before, and she got 19 something because mom did it for her. She got like 1960 or something like
that. Something like that, yeah.
And they come back and say 1656. So, you know, I'm kind of stunned about this because I have never actually seen this in 20 years of doing it. Mont knows more about it. So what did Mont, your property manager, say?
Yeah, he thought he's had some experience with some newer landlords with Section 8 too, where it seems like they're starting to do that a little bit with newer landlords. But there's definitely, he felt there's definitely room for negotiation and has seen that that works. We're kind of going through that right now.
So you're talking with someone at Section 8 saying, hey, the exact same property just rented for $300 more from your organization. You want this person to be homeless or what? I mean, what's that conversation like?
Yeah, haven't had it yet, but it's going to go somewhat similar to that, I think.
So. Okay. The other question I asked you is, so let's say you can't have a Section 8 tenant. What does Mont think that the market rent would be for just a normal, you know, renter?
Yeah, we had it listed at $1,895 while we had it posted out there. So I think that's pretty fair for what we're seeing. We had a lot of interest.
Okay. So we were shooting for $1,850, maybe a tiny bit conservative. You think worst case scenario is you're probably going to get the $1,850, maybe the $1,895 from a non-Section 8 tenant if that's what you wanted. Okay. And then, you know, tune in to find out, but we'll be really interested in seeing. Any lessons learned so far last couple of months of doing this? People listening to this are probably somewhat newer investors. They're probably like where you were 2 months or 8 years ago thinking, God, do I want to do this? Is it worth it? What do you say to people like that?
Get started is really the big thing. Cause I read tons of books over the last 8 years. I, you know, did a lot of webinar kind of things, all the stuff you could think of. I was doing a lot of that and just never pulled the trigger to just go find out, you know, go talk with somebody who's done it. Go see if you can get help from somebody like you, Charles, who can take you through it and just say, here's how it works. You know, you can go you might find out it's not for you, but you got to do something to go find that out. I think that was the biggest thing for me. Once we started doing it, I'm ready to go. I'm ready for another property, that kind of thing. Now, I mean, it was a fun journey. So
the 8 years of reading and blogs and podcasts, like, how prepared did you feel? Did that help you? And I'm really curious to know. Yeah. Did that prepare you for the actual going ahead and jumping in?
I was well over prepared, I feel like. Not that I knew all the details, but, you know, I'd run through different numbers all the time. We talked about cap rate, GRM, all that kind of stuff. And, I've been immersed in that for 8 years, but I feel like there was a lot of, at least in my mind, it was, this is the way you do it. You make your money on the buy, all these things that aren't necessarily true. I mean, you don't want to stretch too far, but it's still something you just got to go do and realize, hey, in the scheme of things, you just got to get started, learn some things, and you can go from there. So it was a lot of the basics. You get the foundation, but until you go do it, as with a lot of things.
Yeah, no doubt. Any questions that I should have asked you? What else do you think people would want to hear from you?
You know, I think there's also a lot of stuff that I've seen out there about networking, which is obviously a big deal. But to me, it always felt like it was, hey, go to the realtor associations, that kind of thing, and find people who have done it and the mentor. And there are people out there that will do it. But it's not this thing you have to go to all of the meetings and find all of these people. You just got to go start meeting people, and you find someone like yourself who's got a lot of contacts, can help you out, can get you moving forward. And another thing I struggled with, and this might just be me, but is I always thought, you know, why would somebody want to take the time to mentor someone else when they've got everything else going on? And again, there's a lot of people out there that do. They want to help people. They were in your shoes at one point and know what it's like. And it's been really helpful with you and all the people that you've hooked me up with as we went through this. Just moving forward and realizing people are there to help and want to.
Yep, absolutely true. So, Mark, a question. You bought one property now. You learned a lot. Did you learn anything that would get you to buy a different property in any way for the second one? With your experience now, what have you learned in terms of buying your next property?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things I learned is townhome and condos is something that I'm definitely interested in. As we looked at it, and again, the books and everything that I had read, it was those are scary. You don't know when there might be a special assessment and all these things.
That's definitely true.
But I also kind of equate that to, you know, your sewer line breaks. You're not going to know about that. So it's the same kind of thing in my mind. You just got to have the money there for in case it happens. But like we found a great HOA. Right. So you hope you can find something like that. But I really like the condos and townhomes with HOAs. I think it's something I want to keep doing, at least at this point.
Okay.
Long term, it could definitely change, you know, as numbers potentially get better in some other, you know, duplexes, triplexes, stuff like that. But I think there's good numbers right now in condos and a little bit easier for somebody new like me to step into.
So you feel pretty good about this purchase then. It's not like you want to buy something completely different the next time. So far, so good with what you're saying.
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Mark, if you could go back 8 years and tell yourself 8 years ago what you know now, in other words, advise a client who's 8 years away from potentially buying their, you know, their first investment property, what would you whisper into their ear, having spent 8 years learning on paper some real estate stuff?
Yeah, don't wait. I think that's the big thing. Really, if I were to go back, it's get hooked up with the right people, realize that, you know, we don't know when, so you've told me this a million times, Charles, we don't know when the top of the market, quote unquote, is going to be. And it probably will go up eventually again anyway, even if there is a top and it dips. And I think that was one of the big things, is that especially as the economy's grown here in Denver like it has, it's kind of been a, well, where's the top? Where's the top? I don't want to overpay. It's not necessarily about that. You don't want to overpay, but you don't know what it's going to be. So if the numbers work, you're still in good shape, and go do it is really it still.
Mark, thanks for coming into the studio. Really appreciate your talking with us. Hopefully we can make this a series as you develop in your real estate career. And just want to thank everybody for taking the time, and catch us on the next one.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Chris Lopez here again. So during the interview, they discussed the rent coming in about $200 lower than anticipated. Lucky for us, the interview was actually recorded a few weeks before we published the podcast, so we have time on our side. So I was able to get in touch with Mark for an update on the rent. Here's what he did. He reached out to the Denver Housing Authority to discuss the low rent. He was actually able to get in touch with the rent appraiser, who admitted that there is a rental comp of $1,200 for a 3-bedroom in the area. So after some back and forth, Mark was able to convince him to remove the comp, since they both agreed it was an unfair and inaccurate comp for Mark's property. So once it was removed, the rent came back at $1,864, which is actually a little bit higher than he had originally anticipated. So after some back and forth, it all worked out well. Mark also said it was a great learning experience. So if you're looking to buy your first investment property, check out our website, denverinvestmentrealestate.com, for a lot more investor resources. You can also reach out to Charles to schedule an investment consultation. That's it for this episode. Remember that you can access the show notes at denverinvestmentrealestate.com/podcast2. Thanks for listening. This is Chris Lopez, signing off until next time.